Thank you, Tim. And now I'd like to invite Paul McCarthy of the International Federation of Airline Pilots Association to give the final presentation of this session.
Thank you. Good morning. This reminds me of an excellent example of a terminal area where I'm en route and I tried to get to the runway. It's not optimum. I've heard a lot of plans. The plans are great. The plans are all consistent. Everybody wants to do the same thing. And I have to tell you, the plans en route are proceeding very nicely. And there's a lot of fuel and emission saving that can be done en route. I have to think back in 1968, I was operating an aircraft with an inertial reference system. I was able to file and fly an RNAV route all the way across the United States without reference to any ground-based nav aids in 1968. So our plans here in 2010 are to make this a reality by 2015, 2020. We have plans. We have a little trouble with implementation. Pilots aren't really involved too much in this. We mostly get impacted with noise abatement procedures and looking at the safety implications of noise abatement procedures. But noise abatement procedures can really impact emissions considerations in the terminal area, and that's where we're having trouble. Fuel flow equates to emission in pilots' simplistic terms. The highest fuel flow I have while flying is immediately after takeoff. Don't point me in the wrong direction so you can give me an unrestricted climb, get me to 20,000 feet, and then turn me on course. That's not good enough. I need to be able to take off, turn, and climb to altitude. That is the maximum amount of fuel savings you can get on any trip, if you can get that airplane to altitude. So if I have 10 aircraft on a continuous descent arrival, and I have to hold them to allow one heavyweight aircraft to fly through their airspace to get to altitude, do it. That requires airspace planning at a strategic level. You cannot do this ad hoc. You cannot do it tactically. You have to have a plan. I'm hopeful that the plans that are out there are going to be implemented. But let me go back to what I just talked about. We historically have concerned ourselves with the safety implications of noise abatement procedures, both departure and arrival. Some of the things that we have been asked to do or asked to consider have simply been bad operating practices. And since our responsibility is exclusively the safe conduct of the flight, a bad operating practice for the mitigation of noise is not going to happen. But let's consider what impact noise has on the emissions question. The basic driver behind congestion is the number of runways that you have and the number of aircraft that wish to use those runways in a given period of time. When you schedule more aircraft to use the runway than can physically be accommodated, you have delays, either in the ground or in the air. We have congestion in the terminal area, which backs up and creates congestion en route. And then we come and we have all of these elaborate plans to deal with that congestion that ultimately is caused by the lack of runways. So when you take away something, take away the fact that a community that wants air service probably needs politically to be prepared for the infrastructure that is required to provide that air service. Finally put, if you don't have enough runways, you're never going to solve these problems. Secondly, when you try and solve the noise equation, you try and get a political accommodation by operationally abating noise, you begin to come up with procedures that become not unflyable, but very, very marginal. So the pilot community has a request when you're looking at the root cause of all of this. Any procedure that we do operationally needs to be trainable. If it's a continuous continuous climb departure, if it's a continuous descent arrival, a continuous descent final approach, a low drag configuration approach, call it what you will, we have to be able to take a pilot who is going to fly all around the world, bring him to the simulator, and train a procedure. We cannot train a procedure for every airport that has a noise problem. We have to train a procedure. Why, you might ask? Because things can and frequently do go wrong. And the flight crew then has to rely upon their training and their standardization. So we cannot accept a tailored set of procedures for a given airport or airspace to solve a local problem. Secondly, there is an increasing reliance on 4D, and that's a good thing. 4D is a really good thing to deal with the congestion that's created by not having enough runways. But some would tell you that the 4D can only be viable if it is always flown automatically. Well, at altitude, I would agree. But in the terminal area close to the ground, if a procedure requires that the machine do the flying rather than the human, just when everything is at its worst, the machine is going to not do it. And for all of you who have your computers open and operating right now, has Bill Gates sabotaged you at least once this morning? Those same programming logics will apply when I'm trying to navigate an aircraft close to the ground with very little performance envelope available. I do not want to completely trust the machine in that environment. Even when I'm doing an auto land, I always have a procedure and a capability to take over manually and get out of there. Do not create procedures that do not allow us a manual escape valve. So, in summary, plans are great. I encourage them, keep going. But give yourself a reality check and go for the low-hanging fruit. Your biggest gains are going to be done below 10,000 feet. Your biggest gains are going to be done by matching capacity with the available runway capacity. When you do those, everything else will sort of fall into place, and the wonderful savings that have been promised to you might actually be achieved. Thank you very much.